Afternoon, we're going to start.
I'd like to welcome the Minister for European Affairs of the Irish government. I know that your official name in position is longer than this one, but I think we can resume the, your title in this way. We will have as much time as you wish to discuss with us. We have at this stage four parties here in this room. The deputies will introduce themselves afterwards. Now I will switch into Portuguese. There is a translation, so you can use it if you wish.
Thank you, members of the parliament. We'll start now this hearing of the European Union Affairs of the Minister of the Irish Republic, who I welcome to this parliament, saying that this is a room where the European Commission Affairs is not usually held in this room because it's a bit larger than it was needed. But we have had different sessions in this one, so that's why we are in this room now. But anyway, we have the representatives of four of the parties, the Social Democratic Party, which is the majority, the Socialist Party, CDS-PP, and also member of the coalition of the government, and PCP, Communist Party. We'll follow this format. I'll give the floor to the minister that will make his initial intervention, and then I'll give the floor to the deputies that will speak as they wish. So I'll give the floor to the minister, and thank you for your presence.
Obrigado, and thank you very much for the opportunity to be here with your committee. Thank the Vice President. It's a great honor for me to be here. I've had a number of days now in Portugal meeting with many of your politicians and some groups and some of your media, and it has been a very interesting and very informative period for me. So I'm very happy to come and talk to your committee today. The most important element, of course, is to perhaps answer any questions that you may have, but I will just maybe briefly give an outline of perhaps the current position in Ireland. We have shared a very, very similar path over the last number of years. Of course, Europe has had three countries that had programs, Greece being one, and Ireland and Portugal, who have successfully exited the programs. The economic position in Ireland is doing quite well, especially if you compare it from where we have come. We are really, I think, 1 year ahead, at least, of Portugal in the process. We were in trouble economically before Portugal, and I think equally we exited the programme a period before you have. And I think that that perhaps explains still some of the little differences. But in 2014, we achieved growth in our economy of 4.8%, and we expect to have similar growth this year. We have managed to reduce unemployment, which was too high, from a high of 15.1%. It's today just gone under 10%. We still have too high a number of our population that are unemployed. We have, like many other countries, still a youth unemployment problem, and we have a very high problem in Ireland of jobless households, higher than most other countries in Europe, where whole families are without work and unemployment. Our deficit, we have managed to achieve our targets over the last number of years to arrive at a point now where our deficit is below the 3% point of GDP. And we have just now recently started to see long overdue, in fact, reemergence of domestic demand. We saw reasonably early in the process a re-establishment of foreign direct investment into our country, and some of the measures we took at the earliest point to re-establish our competitiveness and a refocus on our traditional industries, which would include food and drink exportation, they recovered quite quickly. But the domestic economy and domestic demand has just recently now started to recover, and this has been, I suppose, the most important element in creating job creation, because we had a period of growth at the beginning when unemployment didn't fall. It was, I suppose, like often happens at the beginning of recovery, a period of jobless growth. So that has bedded down now, and we now have a sustained position of growth. We still have, even though the gap has very significantly narrowed, we still have a problem with too many of our young people leaving the country. This year, however, about 80,000 left in 2014, but 60,000 came back. So we very much hope in 2015 that we will arrive at a point where the amount who leave will match the amount who return. We have always had a strong tradition of our young people leaving, but we want that obviously to be a voluntary movement. We have suffered domestically because for quite a long period of time we haven't invested in public infrastructure such as schools, roads and hospitals, and this is something that is now becoming quite urgent, that because of the economic correction that we had to put in place, a lot of the capital expenditure did not take place in Ireland, and that is something that we need to correct as a matter of urgency. Within our program, we did renegotiate some significant changes to the original program we had. Of those, the extension of the terms, the extension of the program itself, of course, originally, the reduction of interest rates, but also some choices we wanted to reduce, for example, VAT, the value-added tax on the hospitality sector, which we negotiated, which proved to be quite beneficial, and we also wanted to increase the minimum wage. Ireland has what the Germans would call a grand coalition, so we're a coalition of the two largest political groupings. It would be similar to, I suppose, Germany. If you were to use the European Parliament groupings, it would be a coalition of the Social Democrats and the EPP. So there was very strong cross-party political consensus about the journey that we would have to take. Equally, because of our constitution, and I know you have a constitutional court in Portugal that's involved as well in these issues, we had a different system. We required to put the fiscal stability treaty and, in essence, our own program to a referendum at the beginning of the process. That referendum was about 62% who supported our program. And I think historians, or even now, we can look back and say that did give a legitimacy and a mandate to the program in Ireland that for politicians, I think, helped as we went through some of the more difficult changes. We significantly broadened our tax base. Ireland had become very dependent on property tax and on the building industry. So our banking crisis and the collapse of our building industry essentially caused much of our difficulty. And many of the measures we had to bring in that were in our program were fairly sensible measures to broaden our tax base, including property taxes, other social taxes, so to reduce our dependency on building and on the development type taxes. So our story is reasonable. We still have some economic challenges that are not insignificant. It's a very similar tale in many ways to Portugal, and yet in the detail, of course, there are some significant differences. I could touch, if I have time, on one or two other areas. Is that, have I time, or do you want me to go to questions? Okay. As a government, as a small open economy on the periphery of Europe, with the focus on export and food production, the similarities between Ireland and Portugal are actually quite remarkable. I know we have a shared position, for example, on the connectivity for peripheral regions and for energy union. Our government has a very strong position on TTIP. We see that TTIP has huge potential, particularly for smaller countries and particularly for small and medium-sized enterprises within those countries. And we think much of the debate to date has been erroneous in that it has suggested that TTIP was about big countries, big businesses within those. We actually think that's not the case. We think big multinational companies manage to get around treaties in any event, and the TTIP is more about the small and medium-sized enterprises, and we very much believe it is the opportunity, perhaps a once-in-a-generation opportunity, where Europe and America can agree the highest standards of regulations between both blocs that will allow us to set the standards for the world itself. Unlike your great country of Portugal, we were occupied in Ireland for 600 or 700 years by our close neighbours, the United Kingdom. And as Minister for European Affairs, I haven't been at a meeting yet where I haven't been asked about what will happen with the United Kingdom and their referendum with respect to membership of the European Union. We didn't engage as a country, as a government, in the Scottish referendum, but in this case we are very blunt. We believe that in the best interests of Europe, in the best interests of Ireland, and in the best interests indeed of the United Kingdom, we want to see the United Kingdom staying within the European Union. And I think Europe has been a remarkable success story and a political project that has delivered so much for the people of this continent. And yes, of course, there are and will continue to be areas of political debate and indeed political disagreement. The very membership of the European Union and that collective spirit and collective ambition we all share is extremely important to us. So, as I said, I think it's important maybe to get questions. I could talk about, you know, the European semester, the digital single market. I just touched on energy union, as I say, which is very important for us. I suppose to finish my opening remarks, we strongly are of the view that what Europe should learn from Portugal and Ireland is that there is a purpose, in fact, to having strong economic rules to allow countries to be competitive. Europe itself, I think, has lost competitiveness, and the journey we have travelled in Ireland has allowed us regain growth, and I think that is a good example for the rest of the European Union. It has not been without difficulty for the citizens of Europe, but I think both Ireland and Portugal have perhaps shown that some of these hard choices can actually achieve what the original ambition of them was hoped to be. Thank you.
Thank you. I will give the floor to the MPs that want to intervene. Two or three interventions, and then we'll give back the floor to the minister. Dr. Antonio Cardoso, Todd Marques, Carmo Cruz. Chairman, I welcome the Ministry of the European Affairs to welcome in the presence of, in the Parliament and in the Commission of the European Affairs where we are. After this, I would like to address a question, ask a question that has to do with energy. You said about the importance of the energy and the competitiveness of the companies, and that Ireland would be following a path where energy was fundamental to improve that competitiveness. Portugal is a country that has, in average, yearly 3,000 hours of solar exposition. We have a very good chart for winds, and where the wind farms can be well used. To achieve this independence and energy independence in Portugal would be fundamental, given the high costs of the energy represents in the, for the Portuguese economy. The question that I ask has to do with the perspective of the energy connections with Europe, in Europe, especially from Spain and Portugal in the Iberian Peninsula, to be able to make the energy and the gas to the rest of Europe. So the perspective that Ireland can have in the support of to Portugal to turn to community funds to have this energy independence. Thank you. The Deputy Marques is from Social Democratic Party. Minister, welcome to the Portuguese Parliament. It's an honor to, for us to receive you in this Commission of European Affairs. I would like to ask you some questions, but I would like to recur that a path of the countries like Portugal and Ireland went, and where we share the compliance of a memorandum that we didn't want, that both countries were successful and that were examples to all European Union. Today, both Portugal and Ireland have made a very step-by-step good path, sometimes in a more hand-in-hand, in a more colloquial language, in the cooperation path. So these, our two countries, have achieved their success. And I think that the Irish success was also the Portuguese success, and vice versa. That's why I want to thank you as the responsible for the European affairs of the Irish government. Today and after the your introduction, that when you said that with some relevance that both Portugal and Ireland had made reforms that other countries like Belgium or France or Italy have not done, and now have the need to do it, to be able to recover the structural problems that they are facing. And I would like you to explain your position, because it is important for us to understand the context and to clarify what we think, what is your opinion that Portugal and Ireland have made their reforms in advance, and other countries that, after seeing the success of Portugal and Ireland, have followed this path. Unfortunately, the Greeks have not made this option, not even after the success of Portugal and Ireland. So, Ms., I would like to ask you another question. You said that, and you mentioned that the ECB strategy, this new strategy for the European Union, was late, but was welcome. The question that I ask is, if Portugal and Ireland would be able to take this benefit of this strategy if they had not done the structural reforms they've done, if it was possible for Portugal and Ireland to benefit from this new policy, more flexible policy, more investment of ECB in the European Commission, if they hadn't done the homework as they did. I would like to ask you, what are your expectations for the materialization of the commerce agreement between the Europe and the United States, which is seems to be very important for Ireland, as it is for Portugal, and what was is your opinion, what is your vision, especially your expectations for the materialization of a plan that has created so much expectation in Portugal and in Europe. Thank you. Thank you. Professor Lino Ramos from CDSPP, thank you. I would like to welcome the minister. Welcome to the parliament that is as our Rey Dom Luís, King Dom Luís. I would like to say that Portugal and Ireland has a lot of in common, not only their peripheral geographic position, but also the moments of difficulties that they have overcome, and the cohesion and nation meaning that have enabled them to overcome their difficulties. Ireland has said that at this moment, from the point of view of their GDP, 4.5% growth, which is a healthy economy and sustainable economy, and an example for the rest of Europe, but also has some bets and challenges that were overcome or achieved. And Ireland, from the point of view, economic point of view, is an example of dynamism regarding all Europe. One of the core issues that you said had to do with the SMEs. It was one of the bets of the Irish economies, and the question that I would like to ask is if that bet on the SMEs was a bet for the creation of employment and the creation of local employment for all the Irish people. Another situation that is also in common with Portugal is the fact that, as in Ireland, Portugal has loads of people living outside, immigrants. There's been a bet of the Irish diplomacy and the reinforcement of the economy and the promotion of the economy through diplomacy has been one of the reinforcement factors of the promotion of the country. How this bet on their expatriate communities was also a bet to capture more assets and investments for Ireland. And at last, I've seen that Ireland has been one of the countries that has been fighting for the protection of data and the free movement of these data. One of your tasks is the responsibility of the data. And this is a sign that the protection of data is very important for Ireland. The access to information and the protection of that information is crucial for a competitive economy. From this point of view, what are the expectations of the Europe and the Irish government about this agreement? Which difficulties you can understand as existing against this agreement?
Mr. President, I greet you. I greet you in the name of the Parliamentary Group of the Communist Party. And the Minister, I greet the Minister of European Affairs and Protection of Data. I thank him for his introduction. This presentation is very similar to what was our trajectory here in Portugal. Portugal, like Ireland, was subject to a program of adjustment, a program the negotiation of which amongst governments, between governments and the institutions, the IMF, the ECB and the EU. But allow me to say my view is slightly different. We already heard today that these programs were a success. It's not what the Portuguese Communist Party believes, because as happens with Ireland, Portugal has very high rates of unemployment. Our level of yesterday, the latest data on unemployment published by the Institute of Statistics show that officially, there is a 14.1 rate of unemployment. We have 35% youths in unemployed. We can see that there are, you mentioned this too for Ireland, there are very high levels of unemployment and of youths, and you said it. But aside from that, this could be a reason. This is not a reason for saying. There's no reason for saying that the results of these programs are wonderful or successful. But there's more to say. There's the question of emigration. Here in Portugal, it has been very pronounced. in the last few years, more than 300,000 Portuguese people have left the country, and they left because in Portugal they could not find any employment, no opportunity for their ambitions, neither for the present nor for the future. And this is also one of the things that we would like to underline. But there's still more. And the Portuguese debt, the public debt of Portugal, goes on increasing all the time. The investment, public investment, has diminished over time and continues to contract. And this is very significant. Therefore, there are several reasons to make us consider that the result of this program of intervention as not as very nefarious for our country, but we have also said for other countries which have been under the programs of adjustment of their own. But what I wanted to ask you above all, you said that in the last few years in Ireland, we have seen a reduction in public investment in hospitals, in schools, in roads. You said it was necessary to invert this tendency, this process. Here in Portugal, we have been witnessing the same situation, a continuous disinvestment in these important areas. What I would like to hear from you is how does the Irish government think it is going to solve this problem? By how much has this investment dropped? The investment that should have been done during this period of adjustment, and also now as you come out of it. What is the investment which is going to be carried out now to recover from this problem? And could you tell us what was the impact on Ireland as a result of this contraction in social investments or structural investments? Thank you.
Okay. There's some very good and very detailed questions there. If I could start with the first question, and thank you all for your questions on the energy competitiveness. Certainly, at the most recent European Council, it was at the Irish insistence that a specific reference to the peripheral nations and the connectivity that would be inserted. We also, like Portugal, see huge potential given our marine base for renewable energy. We have a very exciting project to have a connectivity with France, which would be the first direct connectivity that we would have with mainland Europe. We don't usually say mainland Europe, but mainland Europe through France. And I think that has the potential to be another branch of the connectivity for energy that we will see to the west of the European Union. And I think it is extremely important for a number of reasons. We require in many areas for the European Union to be more competitive, but we also need to have very strong regard for energy security. And the western seaboard of the European Union, whether it is in Portugal or Ireland or France or wherever, has the potential, I think, given our very large marine coastline, the very strong level of wind we have. I go on my holidays every year to Lagouche, and it's very windy down on the southwestern point of the European Union. So the potential for those connectivities is extremely important. I think when you talk of investment, I think within the Juncker package, there is definitely the potential to look at big European connectivity projects, and I very much hope that the difficulties that the Iberian Peninsula have had with respect to connectivity and energy are now, given recent commitments, going to be addressed. I think that is not just in the interests of Portugal and Spain. I think it is broader, a very, very important part of the jigsaw for European Union connectivity, and I think we need as a block of countries to continue to invest significant money in the production of new technology, particularly renewable and environmentally friendly. If I may come to the second question, and it's my honour to be here with you, to just say that when we talk about reforms, there are two reasons why Portugal and Ireland and other countries embarked on reforms. First of all, is to reform our own economies, obviously. But there is the overriding importance that the European Union itself collectively has to have a strong economic base. And we do, I think, have an important role in saying to other member states, you know, we require you to do as we have done for our collective benefit. Europe has been a growth-free zone now for many years. You're starting to have growth again here in Portugal, and we have it. And you know, I think reference was made to Greece. We have to acknowledge that Greece had, in fact, started to see some improvements in its economy over the last period of time. And you know, we hope that they will again continue to have them. But with respect to it being late but welcome, and the benefit for a country is doing their homework, the answer to your question is I do not believe that countries like Ireland or Portugal would be able to benefit from these large structural investments had we not brought our economies to a functioning point and be outside of a program. But they're separate issues. I mean, our economy required to make itself function properly again. And I think it's only properly functioning economies can look to move on with respect to investment. It irritates people in Ireland when, you know, we're regarded as having done our homework or being told to do our homework or, you know, that we're good boys in school, these type of analogies. The reality is that this was done by the Irish people, for the Irish people, first and foremost. And I think the same is the case here. And our programme, I think, was a collection of measures that we would have to have done ourselves in any event. And I think equally, you know, we have to accept that we were lent money by other countries to manage ourselves back to a point of economic recovery. TTIP, you've also asked about, and you know, we are of the view that probably the best success story of the European Union has been the single market. TTIP is a development of a single market between the United States and Europe. We have the capacity in Europe, I think, to set world standards and regulations. And there is no reason, and I believe there should be no acceptance by European negotiators of accepting lower American standards where there are lower American standards. And I think that point is conceded in the United States as well. We have struggled so hard to achieve growth in Europe and failed largely that the potential growth that there is within in TTIP is something that we should really embrace. If I could come to your question next. I mean, for us, you mentioned the small businesses and cohesion. That really is the sign of an economy that's recovering. But there's still a very significant amount of debt on many of our households, in fact, but also on many of our SME sector. And it's something that we actually need to continue to work with our banks through insolvency processes. I don't think we've gotten that mix right just yet, and I think we certainly have a job of work to do to try and decouple people who can't pay with people who won't pay, and indeed to allow business people, particularly in the SME sector, who've been through economic difficulty, really through no fault of their own, to allow them to rehabilitate themselves. We, as you mentioned, we are a very outward-looking country. We have a very large diaspora, which we do use. We have a minister for the diaspora. In fact, in the reshuffle just last June, we appointed three new ministries, and I'll come to one of them in a second, the second part of your question, but we put in place a minister for the diaspora. We also put a specific banking minister in place as well. And I think that for a country like Ireland, and if I could say a country like Portugal that has such an influence around the world, it has been already a benefit to us to actually formally have at ministerial level somebody who is responsible for engagement with our citizens or people who refer to themselves as Irish around the globe. Data protection is the other new part of the ministry which has come to myself. Yes, we strongly feel that data protection is going to become more of an important role across our lives. The digital changes that we have seen in the world over the last 20 years are truly remarkable. And even, 15 years ago, Google didn't exist. 11 years ago, Facebook didn't exist. So it is happening at a remarkable pace. My job is to provide a whole of government approach to data protection. We feel that we have to have very strong rules in Europe that protect privacy. 1995 was the last time Europe agreed rules on the protection of data. That is ridiculous given the change that we've had, and we are trying now to agree new rules. And we have allowed the protection of data to not be robust and strong enough. So we also, however, feel that there is great potential in Europe with respect to data analytics, data storage, and the potential that the proper management of data can give in health sectors, in education sectors, and indeed in business generally. It should be a concern to Europe that of the top 30 data companies on the planet, and I won't mention the Googles, the Facebooks, and you all know them, the Twitters, and LinkedIn, they are all American. And Europe has missed a whole age of development. And that's why I think we need, while protecting the privacy of our citizens, we need also to have regard for the potential and the freedom that our people enjoy when using digital technology, and it's to get that blend correct. So my job is to, I suppose, provide a whole of government approach and also to ensure that the different government departments comply with their own obligations to keep our citizens' data safe, because as you will be aware, governments are huge processors of data. Finally, the final question that we had, I mean, your point, about unemployment being high, about people leaving the country. The reality is, if Ireland did not enter into a programme and correct our economy, unemployment would be much higher. We would have much more people leaving, and we would have no future for our people or our country. There was no alternative. I don't want to pick out any particular country in the European Union that hasn't, I suppose, engaged as it should, but we had a choice in Ireland. We did put it to a referendum, so we don't even accept that it was put onto the people by the government or put onto the people by Europe. The people themselves voted to save their own economy, and we have. Yes, there has been a significant cost to the people of Ireland by virtue of the fact that we had to recover our economy. But the alternative of not having an economy that can pay for itself would be to, in perpetuity, expect other nations to just give us money. That's not a realistic way to function or operate. It's not realistic for any country, I think, to have that view of the world. Was there difficulty in Ireland by virtue of us having to correct our economy? Yes, but the difficulty wasn't caused by us having to recover our economy. The difficulty was caused by virtue of the fact we got into trouble in the first place. And, there are reasons for that. you know, we feel we weren't completely on our own in many of the difficulties we had. There was poor regulation across Europe. But the high public debt, to be honest, if again we didn't have a program, we have essentially stopped now adding to our public debt. And therefore, you know, if we hadn't corrected our economy over a number of years, you know, we would be in a far worse position now. So, you know, I accept that it's a point of political disagreement, but I think, you know, you can see quite bluntly where we could be if we hadn't made the changes as to where we are. We are now the fastest growing economy in the OECD. In Europe, I think if we hadn't put the program in place, we would unquestionably be in a dire economic situation with no hope for our future or for our young people. So that's why, while it was difficult, I have to compliment the Irish people for, you know, accepting the political reality, the economic reality, and the societal reality, that there was only one route to recover our country and our people. And, you know, that was difficult, but there was no other way that would have worked. I hope I answered most of the questions.
Yes, thank you, thank you. Of Antonio Rodriguez to have 1 minute.
I have a request from Antonio. A question of a minute. Thank you. I didn't want to intervene in the debate due to friendly relationship with the minister, but I'm asking for a minute to mention a situation that wasn't mentioned so far, that besides everything else, the Minister of European Union of the Irish Republic is the parliamentary member of parliament, and so I would like to honor to receive and to congratulate him because he wanted to meet with us. I would like to welcome him and to leave this note of personal friendly. And I wish that Ireland can go and be successful in the future. I still have a question if the minister asks us. From the MP from the Socialist Party, I ask you to be brief because we are a little late. Good afternoon and welcome to our house. Two or three questions very quickly. I'm very happy to have you and to be able to discuss this. As for first, the question of the success, Ireland going out of the adjustment program. And my question is, if during this adjustment process, the achievement of the adjustment program, if any time the Irish government has not considered the economic growth policies as a priority of their action, and or if the Irish government have not considered the fight against unemployment, fight against the qualified immigration, or if these policies of economic growth in promotion of the qualified employment in Ireland are more recent measures of this adjustment program. And then regarding the privatization of the water, which is something that is very concerning to Irish people and Portuguese people also. Could you give us an idea of what's happening in this question in the island?
Okay, I might take the second question first. We're not privatizing the water. We have committed that we never will. We actually have inserted into the legislation that there would have to be a referendum before the water or water utility could be privatized. What we have done is we have brought in, we are the last country in Europe to bring in water charges, so you must pay for water. It will cost €2 per week, It is a very, very low charge for water. You have to understand, in Ireland it is always raining. So the thought of paying for water has been a little bit difficult for people to accept. It is also, to be fair, it has been a measure from our package that we brought in after the Troika were gone a year and a half. So people, the Americans might say, enough already. You know, they didn't like it. Some people didn't like it. But the charges now are in, they're very low, they're very modest, and you know, people still are concerned. It has been the one area that has brought some level of protest in Ireland. We politically handled it badly. We didn't fully agree with our socialist colleagues as to how we should do it, and that gave rise to a political uncertainty that was unusual in 4 years when we managed things quite well. So I think it's safe to say that we handled it politically badly. But I think we're over that now, and I think the principle of using the modest charge for water to spend on our water infrastructure, because of course, even though water is, it's always raining in Ireland, you're actually paying for the treatment and having drinking quality water. So, but we will not be privatizing. Even our party didn't want to privatize it, but our colleagues certainly did not want to privatize it, and they were correct. That is a very interesting question about when the growth really came to the economy. The reality is that the strong growth in employment and the strong growth of our economy did start after the program ended. But we couldn't have had the growth or the recovery if we hadn't completed the program. Aside from the banking crisis, we really had lost our competitiveness. The country had become quite uncompetitive, and that's why we needed to, to have in place the correction. We didn't concede, we didn't achieve, growth or employment growth for quite a period, actually, and it kind of came together. In fact, halfway through our program, unemployment was still going up. So it did take more time. In fact, it has been surprising how strong the growth has continued for 2 years. And as I say, I think Portugal is just in time is a little bit behind. So I think hopefully you will also now start seeing the growth that will come, you know, from structural reform, particularly, you know, in the area of I mean, the reason we all want growth is of course to create jobs and have employment. It hasn't happened, so to speak, by accident. And again, to thank Antonio for his kind words. The first time I met Antonio, I was at a meeting in the European Parliament, and we were sitting at the same table: Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain, all together in a row. And it was a little bit unusual, so myself and Antonio had to give the perspectives of Portugal and Ireland, and I think we've travelled a long way in the last 4 years, both countries. So I'll finish by saying, I think I'm finished, that it's a great privilege for me to be here and to meet you. We have a great, close relationship. So many Irish people come to Portugal and enjoy your beautiful country, and we have very good connectivity now between Oporto, Faro, and Lisbon, and Ireland, including my own city of Cork in the south. So, you know, I think one of the areas we must work harder is smaller countries must develop stronger relationships between the different political groupings and between the parliaments themselves, because there are some very loud voices in the European Union and very big countries. And we can agree we have many similarities here today, and I think we have to work a little bit harder as small countries, irrespective of the party political elements. We need to work a little bit harder to fight our corner from time to time. And that's why I am delighted to be here for the last couple of days in beautiful Lisbon. Obrigado.
Muito obrigado. Podemos...
Thank you. We can conclude this hearing. The opportunity of a minister that there is a political debate, important political debate in the Portuguese Parliament at the national level about if our program was successful or not. If there are different opinions, divergent opinions from the government parties and the parties on the opposition. We recorded a vote that it's Portugal, it's only a bit behind in the in time from Ireland. We know that it's not, some of us won't agree on that because we think that there are more serious problems, but we also think that Portugal is following a similar path than as Holland. These are different political opinions that exist in as it natural in parliaments between the MPs, but your presence and your vision, Minister, was very interesting to see what is the current feeling in Ireland, maybe a bit different from what is going on in Portugal, but it's positive to know that Ireland is growing in the last 2 years at the rhythm, at your rhythm, with the good relations and that many Irish people come to Portugal and have a second house in Portugal. It's good to know that you are in a better position than us. Thank you for your presence.